Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on D-Plex. The content in this episode, which focuses on IP protection in the life science industry, comes from Christian Hoybeck.
All right, let's dive in. Today, we're exploring the incredible world of life sciences. I mean, this is the field that's constantly pushing the boundaries of medicine, biology, technology. It's where the next cure, the next diagnostic tool, it's all born here. But, you know, developing these life-saving innovations isn't just about having a brilliant idea in the lab. It's incredibly expensive, super high risk. We're talking billions of dollars, maybe over a decade, for just one new drug. And most of those efforts, they don't pan out. So imagine you're a small startup, let's call them BioLeap Innovations, right? You've got this amazing, potentially game-changing idea. How on earth do you protect that massive investment? How do you make sure your discovery actually gets to the people who need it?
That's exactly what we're getting into today. We're going to dissect the really intricate world of intellectual property IP protection, specifically in the life sciences. And it's not just some legal formality, you know. It's fundamentally the backbone for these companies and allows them to survive, let alone grow and innovate. Mm-hmm. So we'll unpack the kind of multi-layered strategies companies like your BioLeap Innovations need to use. We're talking patents, sure, but also trade secrets, how they navigate global markets, deal with intense competition. Mm-hmm. Our goal really is to reveal this this layered strategy that's absolutely vital for getting that next life-changing discovery from the lab bench to patient's bedside.
Okay, so life sciences, it covers a huge range, doesn't it? From like the tiniest gene editing tech to massive medical devices. But let's zoom in on the unique challenges this creates for, well, for protecting those ideas. You mentioned high stakes earlier. What really sets this industry apart? It can't just be the money, surely.
No, it's fundamentally different from, say, tech or consumer goods.
Yeah.
First, like you said, the R&D costs are just astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine betting billions on a single project, knowing full well that the vast majority are going to fail, probably in clinical trials. A single new drug development path can easily top $1 billion, take over 10 years.
Wow.
And companies absorb those losses constantly, hoping for just a few big successes to cover everything.
Right.
Then second, the timelines are incredibly long and frankly, uncertain. A breakthrough in the lab. That's just the very, very beginning.
Just step one.
Exactly. Then you've got years of rigorous preclinical testing, then multiple phases of clinical trials on humans. Setbacks happen all the time. And by the time something might finally be ready for market, the whole landscape could have changed.
And regulations too, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. That's the third piece. You're navigating this incredibly strict regulatory environment. Agencies like the FDA in the US, the EMA in Europe, they enforce extremely stringent safety and efficacy standards. That adds layers of cost, complexity, and time that, you know, other industries just don't really face in the same way.
Okay, so it sounds like without some way to protect those few successes, the whole economic model just falls apart. Is it purely about getting that money back, recouping the investment? Or do things like patents play a deeper role, maybe even helping innovation?
You've hit it right on the head. It's much more than just recouping costs, although that's obviously critical. Patents are the fuel for this kind of innovation.
Right.
Think about it. Without that temporary exclusivity, usually around 20 years, maybe with some extensions, why would anyone take that multi-billion dollar gamble?
Yeah, good point.
Competitors could just wait for you to do all the hard work, prove it's safe and effective, and then just copy it immediately. You'd have a price war, a race to the bottom, and that would just suffocate the next potential breakthrough before it even starts. So it's less about recouping past costs and more about creating the incentive, the reason to invest in the future. That's what keeps the whole engine running.
And does that help attract investment too, especially for those smaller players like our BioLeap example?
Absolutely critical.
Yeah.
That promise of future exclusivity demonstrated by a strong patent portfolio is often the single most valuable asset a small biotech startup has.
Okay.
It's what signals that potential for future earnings to venture capitalists and other investors. It's what makes it possible for these smaller innovative companies to even get off the ground and fund their research. And here's the part that might seem a bit counterintuitive. Patents actually foster more innovation.
How so? I thought they were about blocking others.
Well, yes, they grant exclusive rights. But here's the trade-off. In exchange for that exclusivity, the inventor has to fully and publicly disclose their invention in the patent document.
Right, the details.
Exactly, all the details. This sharing of knowledge allows other researchers, other companies, to see what's been done, to learn from it, and potentially to build upon it. It accelerates scientific advancement across the whole industry, rather than, say, keeping everything locked up as a trade secret forever.
Okay, that makes sense. Can you give us a concrete example, something that really shows this strategic power of IP in action? I'm still picturing BioLeap trying to figure this all out.
Sure. A really prominent one is CRISPR gene editing. Yeah. I mean, truly revolutionary technology, right? Allows for precise DNA editing, opens up possibilities for treating genetic diseases.
Huge potential.
Massive. But its discovery immediately led to these incredibly fierce, very complex patent battles between major research institutions like the Broad Institute and UC Berkeley.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. And the outcome of those legal fights wasn't just about, you know, academic prestige. It fundamentally determined who controls the rights to use that technology for developing new therapies, who gets to license it out. It directly shapes market access for whole new classes of treatments.
Wow. Okay.
Or think about something like antibody drug conjugates, ADCs. These are targeting cancer therapies, becoming increasingly important.
Right. Delivering the drug right to the cancer cell.
Precisely. But the IP for a single ADC product isn't usually just one patent. It's often layered. Mm-hmm. You might have separate patents covering the antibody itself, the chemotherapy drug it carries, the special linker molecule that connects them, maybe even the specific method used to join them together.
So it's like a package deal of patents.
Exactly. It creates what people in the field often call a patent thicket. It's this dense web of overlapping rights. And this often means companies have to license technology from each other. They have to collaborate. So IP here isn't just a barrier. It actually becomes a facilitator of these complex developmental partnerships.
Okay, seeing CRISPR and ADCs laid out like that, it really drives home how crucial this is. So if IP is this vital, how does a company actually, you know, build a strategy? It can't just be filing one big patent, especially if they're thinking globally, right?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's far more strategic, much more nuanced than that. The very first step, the foundation, is identifying all the potential IP assets you have. And it's usually much more than just the main drug compound or the core device idea.
So what else counts?
Well, take patents. A strong portfolio isn't typically one super broad patent. It's often what we call a picket fence. Lots of narrower patents surrounding the core invention.
A picket fence?
Yeah, think of it like building a fence with many vertical slats close together. For a new drug, you might patent the main chemical compound, sure. But also maybe a specific crystalline form of it, the method you use to manufacture it, specific dosages, maybe even using it in combination with another drug for a particular effect.
Ah, I see. So it makes it harder for someone to find a loophole.
Exactly. It makes it much, much harder for competitors to just slightly modify something and design around your core protection.
Each patent is a picket in the fence.
Clever. What about other things besides patents?
Then you have trade secrets. These are often, I think, underutilized, but can be incredibly valuable. This could be things like a unique manufacturing process, a special cell line used to produce a biologic drug, a purification technique, maybe even detailed clinical trial data protocols. Basically, any confidential know-how that gives you a competitive edge.
And the advantage there is,
unlike patents, trade secrets don't expire after 20 years. They can potentially offer a competitive advantage indefinitely, as long as you can keep them secret.
That sounds like a big if. It is. It means you need really robust internal security measures, strict access controls, non-disclosure agreements with employees and partners, strong digital security. It's a different kind of protection strategy.
Okay.
And then, of course, you also have things like trademarks protecting your brand names, your drug names and copyrights, maybe for software embedded in a medical device, or even for your clinical trial protocols and marketing materials. It's a whole toolkit.
That is a lot to consider. My first instinct would be, okay, protect everything, everywhere possible, just to be safe.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that's probably not feasible, or maybe not even smart.
Yeah, you'd think maybe, but no. That file everywhere approach would be astronomically expensive, and strategically, it's usually not the best way.
Yeah.
It's actually a highly selective process.
So how do they choose where to file?
It comes down to prioritizing markets very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Companies have to look at where the real commercial potential lies. Which countries have the largest patient populations for their specific product? Where is healthcare spending high? Are there favorable reimbursement systems in place? So you often see the U.S., major European countries, Japan, and increasingly China as top priorities because, well, that's where the biggest markets are.
Makes sense. What else matters besides market size?
The legal and regulatory landscape is crucial. You need markets with strong, predictable IP enforcement. Is there an efficient court system if you need to defend your patent? Are the patent laws clear and consistently applied? A huge market with really weak IP protection. That's a very risky bet.
Right. No point having a patent if you can't enforce it.
Exactly. And this isn't a one-time decision either. Strategies have to adapt. Maybe new markets open up, like in Southeast Asia or Latin America, that become more attractive over time. A startup, like our BioLeap, might initially focus all its resources on just one or two high-value markets to prove their concept and attract investors. An established pharma giant, though, will likely have a much broader, diversified global footprint.
Okay, that clarifies the where. But what about the when? How do companies think about the timing of filing these applications? Does it really matter that much? If you discover something amazing, shouldn't you just rush to the patent office immediately?
Ah, the timing. That's a really strategic, sometimes delicate dance. It's all about balancing the need for early protection against the maturity of the invention itself.
Maturity? What do you mean?
Well, a patent application needs to include a detailed description of the invention, enough detail so someone skilled in the field could actually replicate it. We call this enablement. If you file too early, before you have, say, solid data showing it works or you've really nailed down the specifics,
you might not have enough detail.
Exactly. Your application might lack that required enablement, and the patent could potentially be invalidated later on. But if you wait too long,
someone else might file first. Or you might disclose it accidentally.
Precisely. You risk a competitor beating you to the patent office, especially in first-to-file systems, which are now the global standard. Or you might inadvertently disclose your invention, maybe at a scientific conference or in a publication, before filing. That could make it impossible to get a patent in many parts of the world.
So it's a tightrope walk.
It really is. That's why the priority date, the earliest date you officially file, is so incredibly important.
How do they manage that risk then?
Companies use several tools. In the U.S., for instance, they often start with a provisional patent application. It's a bit less formal, less expensive, but it secures that crucial early filing date.
Ah, like a placeholder.
Sort of. It gives you a 12-month window to gather more data, refine the invention, really solidify everything before you have to file the full, formal, non-provisional application. It buys you time while locking in your priority.
Okay.
Hey. Are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
And internationally. You can't file provisionals everywhere, can you?
No, but there's the Patent Cooperation Treaty, or PCT system. This is huge for global strategy. It allows you to file a single international application that acts as a placeholder, reserving your right to seek patent protection in over 150 member countries.
Wow, 150 countries from one application.
Well, it reserves your right to file later. It doesn't grant a global patent. Those don't exist. But it delays the need to file individual national applications and deal with all the associated costs like translations and local attorney fees for up to 30 months from your priority date.
So it buys even more time.
Yes, crucial time. It allows companies to assess the commercial viability, maybe secure more funding, refine their market strategy before committing to the really significant expense of pursuing patents in multiple specific countries. It's a vital strategic tool for managing costs and risk.
And I've heard about something called evergreening. What's that about? It sounds a bit controversial.
It can be. Evergreening refers to strategies aimed at extending the effective life of IP protection beyond that initial 20-year patent term.
How do they do that?
Typically by filing new patents on incremental improvements or modifications to the original invention. Maybe it's a new formulation of an existing drug, like an extended release version, or a new method of manufacturing it more efficiently, or even discovering a new therapeutic use for that same drug.
So they get a fresh 20-year patent on that improvement.
Potentially, yes. If the improvement meets the criteria for patentability itself being new, non-obvious, and useful. The goal is to maintain market exclusivity for the product family for longer, often to fend off generic competition once the original core patent expires.
I can see why that would be controversial, balancing keeping drug prices high versus encouraging that kind of follow-on innovation.
Exactly. It's a constant tension in the system. Proponents argue it incentivizes companies to keep improving their products, finding better formulations or new uses that benefit patients. Critics argue it could be used to unfairly block competition and keep prices high. It's often subject to intense legal scrutiny and debate. It's definitely a strategic chess move.
Okay, so let's say BioLeap Innovations has navigated all that. They've identified their IP, picked their markets, timed their filing strategically. But the competition in life sciences?
Yeah.
It must be absolutely fierce. How do you stay ahead once you've got your patents filed?
You're right, the competition is intense. And having patents filed is really just the beginning. A global IP strategy isn't complete without ongoing continuous market monitoring and risk assessment. It's not a file and forget situation at all.
What does that monitoring involve? Just watching sales figures?
Oh, much more than that. It's about understanding broader market trends. Tracking shifts in disease prevalence, are certain conditions becoming more common? Watching diagnostic advancements, how are diseases being identified earlier or more accurately? Keeping an eye on new therapeutic approaches are cell therapies, replacing small molecules for certain things. For example, if you're in metabolic diseases, you're constantly monitoring trends in obesity and diabetes to see where the unmet needs and future commercial opportunities might be. It helps align your ongoing R&D with where the market is actually heading.
And keeping tabs on competitors too, I assume.
Absolutely essential. Competitor intelligence is key. This involves systematically gathering and analyzing public information about your rivals.
What kind of information?
Things like tracking their patent filings. What areas are they trying to protect? Monitoring their clinical trial registrations. What drugs do they have in development and for what indications? Reading their news releases. Watching their presentations at scientific conferences.
So you're trying to figure out their game plan.
Pretty much. It helps you understand their R&D focus, anticipate their potential future product launches, see what IP strategies they're employing, and importantly, it can help you identify potential white spaces, areas of unmet need, or technological approaches that aren't heavily patented yet, or maybe your company, BioLeap, could find a unique niche.
This sounds like it leads directly into something you mentioned earlier, freedom to operate, or FTO analysis. That sounds potentially terrifying for a company. What is it, and why is it so critical here?
FTO analysis is, well, it's arguably one of the most critical and often complex parts of the entire IP strategy, especially in life sciences. You could even call it essential due diligence.
Okay.
Essentially, it's a meticulous legal review designed to determine if your planned product or process, say, BioLeap's new drug or diagnostic, can actually be developed, manufactured, and sold without infringing on someone else's valid existing IP rights, particularly patents.
So, checking if the coast is clear before you launch.
Way before you launch. Ideally, you start doing FTO analysis early in development and continue it throughout. Remember those decade-long timelines and billion-dollar investments? Imagine getting to the finish line, ready to go to market, and then discovering that your product infringes a competitor's patent.
That would be catastrophic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Financially devastating, could kill the whole project. So FTO is about identifying those potential roadblocks early so you can deal with them.
How does that process actually work?
Well, first you clearly define the scope. What exactly are we analyzing? Is it the new drug compound itself? A specific formulation? The manufacturing method? A diagnostic kit? Then you conduct really comprehensive searches for relevant patents in all the key countries where you plan to operate.
Just patents.
Primarily patents, as they grant the right to exclude others. The searches need to be thorough, looking not just for directly identical things, but also related technologies. Then patent attorneys or specialized legal experts analyze the patents found to assess the risk of infringement based on the claims in those patents.
And those patent thickets you mentioned make this harder.
Immensely harder.
Yeah.
Because a single product, like an ADC, or even a complex biologic drug, might potentially touch upon dozens of different patents held by various parties. Patents on the active ingredient, the formulation, manufacturing steps, methods of use, delivery devices, you name it.
Wow.
So the FTO analysis has to navigate this entire complex thicket. And because new patents are constantly being filed, and granted, it's not a one-time check. It has to be an ongoing process throughout the product development lifecycle.
Okay, so what happens if the FTO analysis does find a significant risk, a competitor's patent that looks like a direct hit? Is that just game over for the project?
Not necessarily. That's why you do it early. Finding a risk means you have time to manage it.
Yeah.
It's a challenge, not always a dead end. There are several mitigation strategies companies can pursue.
Like what?
Well, one option is to try and design around the problematic patent. Can you alter your invention, your drug formulation, your process, just enough so that it no longer falls within the scope of the competitor's patent claims, while hopefully still being effective?
Is that often possible?
Sometimes, yes, sometimes no. It depends on how broad the patent claims are and the nature of the technology. Another very common approach, especially in this industry, is to seek a license.
Just pay the competitor to use their technology?
Essentially, yes. You negotiate a license agreement, often involving royalty payments, that gives you the legal right to use their patented technology in your product. Given the layered nature of IP we discussed, cross-licensing between companies is actually quite frequent.
Okay. Any other options?
If a competitor's patent presents a really significant roadblock, and you believe it might not actually be valid, maybe you found evidence it wasn't truly novel when it was filed, you might consider challenging its validity.
Taking them to court.
That's one way. Through patent litigation. Or there might be administrative procedures, like post-grant review processes at the patent office, depending on the jurisdiction. It's usually a costly and complex route, but sometimes necessary. And of course, part of risk management is vigorously protecting your own IP. Actively monitoring the market for anyone infringing your patents and being prepared and willing to enforce your rights sends a clear signal.
Right. And you mentioned confidentiality earlier, too.
Crucial. Continuously educating employees about the importance of keeping sensitive R&D information confidential and managing the timing of any public disclosures very carefully is vital to avoid accidentally destroying your own ability to get patent protection later on.
So once a patent is filed and eventually granted, is the hard work done then? Can BioLeap finally relax a bit?
I wish it were that simple. Mm. No, getting the patent granted is a major milestone, but the work definitely isn't done. Post-filing and post-grant management is absolutely crucial.
What does that involve?
Well, first, there's the prosecution phase. It's the back and forth with the patent office examiner. You need to respond to their objections, maybe amend your claims, argue for the patentability of your invention. This can take years. And even during prosecution, there can be strategy involved. For example, if you know a competitor is about to launch a similar product in a key market, you might try to accelerate the examination of your application in that country to get your patent granted faster.
Ah, interesting.
Conversely, sometimes you might want to strategically delay the grant slightly, maybe to align the patent's start date closer to your actual product launch to maximize its effective life.
And after it's granted.
Then it's about maintenance paying renewal fees to keep the patent in force. And critically, it's about ongoing vigilance, continuously monitoring the market for potential infringers. If you find someone using your patented technology without permission, you need to have a clear enforcement strategy ready, whether that's sending a warning letter, negotiating a license, or, if necessary, initiating litigation. The patent's only valuable if you're prepared to defend it.
Wow. It really is a continuous dynamic process, isn't it? So bringing this all together, what does this complex world of life sciences IP mean for us, the listeners, as we think about the next medical breakthrough we might hear about?
Well, I think the key takeaway is that the journey of a life-saving innovation, getting something from a lab idea all the way to a patient, is incredibly complex and fraught with risk. What we've hopefully shown today is that behind every one of those groundbreaking therapies or new medical devices, there isn't just scientific brilliance. There's also a highly sophisticated, dynamic, and absolutely essential global IP strategy at play. It's like the invisible scaffolding that supports the entire structure. It's what ensures those billions of dollars and often decades of incredibly hard work don't just evaporate.
Yeah.
Without that framework, the fundamental incentive to undertake that risky, expensive innovation process would be severely damaged, if not destroyed entirely.
It really paints a picture of a world where the hard science of discovery has to meet this almost art form of protection. And without that protection, as you say, many of the innovations we now rely on or hope for in the future might simply never have seen the light of day. They wouldn't have made it to the patients who desperately need them.
Indeed. And maybe here's a final thought to leave you with. As technology continues to accelerate at this incredible pace, think about advances in gene editing, like CRISPR, or AI being used to discover new drug candidates much faster. How might the very nature of what we consider patentable begin to shift? Could an AI algorithm be an inventor? How do you patent something as fundamental as a gene editing technique without unduly hindering further research? What new ethical and legal challenges will these accelerating technologies present for the next generation of life-saving innovations and for the IP strategies needed to bring them forward? What stands out to you about how these strategies might need to evolve in the face of such rapid change?
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.